Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here with another Tactical Fitness Report. And today we're just going to talk about some things that are occurring, things are happening, changes out there with gyms opening up and public facilities opening up, but some are, some aren't. You know, where do you start again? You know, if, especially I haven't been swimming since March. So I am so tempted, for instance, to find a place to swim that's not my normal pool, you know, which I typically don't do. But we're going to go into some of those type of ideas, you know, whether it's build up your home gym or it's get to the gym, whatever that is. So I'm not really sure what we can title this one, Jeff.
What's next, right?
Yeah, what's next?
Yeah, what's next? Because that's a big question.
Yeah, what's next? How about what's next with your training?
Yeah.
You know, in this current situation.
Yeah, and the ideas are, because Stu and I, we receive a multitude of emails and are appreciative of that we're in a position to help. And they come from all over. They come from different countries. They come really, in this case, from different states. So a close friend of mine, his gym in Omaha, Nebraska, never closed. Some pools in certain states have never closed. Places in Texas, the temperature, for example, just using Texas example, I was looking at the forecast because my better half is traveling there. The temperature is 95 degrees. There's lots of lakes in Texas.
I would definitely be forced.
Yeah, I bought a tri-suit. A very close friend of mine lives on a lake here inside the city of Virginia Beach that people can swim and paddleboard and whatnot. So I was like, well, the ocean's cold still, but a lake is going to be a little bit warmer, right? And so I was like, I'm trying to also get my son a little bit more active right now this time because he's out of school. So it's like, he loves the paddleboard. So we get the paddleboard in the water. He's gonna paddle next to my swim, So think outside the box.
Swim buddy.
Think about that. Get a swim buddy,
Yeah.
It's like, Jeff, you're going to have your, my son's 13. He's a very capable swimmer. He's very capable, and I'm a capable swimmer. So if I cramp, the paddleboard's there, whatever it may be. Because like I said, I haven't swam since March either.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I was thinking? I had a really good idea. One of my guys said that he has a small pool in his backyard that they just opened up. And he actually tied a rope to his waist and anchored it in the flower bushes with a boat anchor. And he just created his own little endless pool without having to turn around every 20 feet. Of a swimming pool. So I was like, you know what? If my pool doesn't open up June 15th, June 16th, I'm going to put one of those little things in. I've already been pricing them. I mean, you put it on the dock too. So that's a good idea.
They sell these, so if you go to swimming magazines, what they'll do, it's called the Infinite Swimmer. All it is is basically a little nylon belt like you'd wear in your dress whites or dress blues. Mm-hmm. They're thin. And it's got a carabiner clips to it. And it's just one of those 4 foot long exercise bands that's been cut.
Right.
So, or you can use rope. And so that's another thing is like, you could do that. Like you can just swim in place, honestly, with that and that rope or that bungee, because it will move some. But
that'd be nice. I need to get in the water after my workouts. Cause yes, it's getting hotter. I need that cool down, because otherwise I can do a little bit in the shower, but it's just not the same cool down when you jump into, 65, 70 degree water and actually cool down after workout. So that's two options right there. One being, if you're going to do open water, definitely find a swim buddy or somebody who wants to paddleboard next to you, which is, I think, a great idea, or canoe or kayak.
Yeah. And if you're fortunate enough to be one of those people that has someone to train with, and I know there's groups like Stu's group, there's definitely groups in California and places where it's like, okay, someone might swim out to a distance and then you switch, then someone paddleboards back and the other one swims back, and you do that a couple times. Yep. Right. And so just understand that, what are we trying to get doing? We're trying to prepare you guys for when things are truly available. It's like, make that one notch closer to being prepared, because, whether we're talking about reintegration to training, that's really what we're talking about. It's like, do we want to start off with a sprint? And again, swimming is one thing. And so Stu, we could start talking about, okay, so we've been, so many people have been relegated to just probably bodyweight exercises or minimal band and resistance stuff. So when your guys are going back to the gym, when you get your guys back in the gym, what is that going to look like?
Yeah, you know, right now, it worked out, I hate to say this, kind of perfectly, because we were transitioning out of our weight room workout anyway, and we're getting into more calisthenics and running. But the thing that we're missing right now is the swim portion that we really ramp up to in the spring and summer. So for the most part, it's not really affecting us. Now, it is affecting some of my guys that came in from the endurance background that need to be in that weight room.
Right.
So we're doing right now, our transition for those guys is everything that we're doing. They are doing, you know, the endurance muscle stamina guys that need to put on some weight. They're doing with weight vests. So they're doing their calisthenics with weight vests. So their repetitions are cut, you know, 60-70% almost. And just making push-ups harder and pull-ups harder and things like that. So, you know, depending on where your weaknesses are, you can manipulate the training to work on those weaknesses. If it is a strength issue, if it's an endurance issue. Right now I'm running and doing calisthenics like crazy. And in fact, so much I just took the day off because I was feeling the burn. Because you can overwork yourself even with calisthenics and running. So, be wary of that for sure. Our transition when the gym opens, I'm not sure how that's going to look. We may have at our community center a different timeline than we previously had, because there'll probably be a section first thing in the morning where the older folks come in and do their workout when it's clean. Right. Yep. They've cleaned it all night, you know, after the day's done and it's all clean, they can come in first and go in. And then, you know, the younger folks can come in afterwards after them. I'm not sure how they're going to juggle, you know, some of the new normal in those type of facilities. You know, depending on your facility, it may be completely different and it's just, you know, everybody's cleaning and after each other and doesn't matter what age group's coming in or whatever, or it's a young musclehead gym that, you know, tends to cater to, you know, younger folks anyway. Yeah. So who knows? I don't know how that's going to look. All I do know is that right now we're doing as best we can to manipulate our high endurance muscle stamina workouts by adding dumbbell activity, TRX activity, weight vests, just to make the calisthenics harder on those that need more of a strength component right now. Yep. So,
yeah. So again, like, so, you know, there's a transition. So understand like what Stu is saying, just kind of draw back a little bit. And it's not that dissimilar to my request that I give people, is that there are very few people that haven't been able to, haven't had to stop with this aggressive resistance training. So a lot of guys definitely probably made a shift mid-training session, whether it's a strength, hypertrophy, power, and speed, or any one of Stu's programs. So the point is, people are like, what do I do? Well, since there's been such a long break, my suggestion is you start those programs over.
Yeah,
but
day one.
Even before that, if you were like in the midst of a very intense training program, my suggestion is, for a couple of reasons. It's like when you get out of boot camp, you don't want to start off training intensity right away, but that's not really in your control, right? But in this case, it is. So we want you to, my suggestions, when I go, hey, go to the gym for 7 to 10 days, at least about 10 days to 2 weeks of training, of beginning to do the types of intense training movements that you're doing, but still pull back some of that volume. Because what you're going to end up doing is you're going to end up immediately overtraining or overreaching. And then you'll be in week 3 of a program that you can't accommodate that much stress. And you're going to end up getting sick, get injured. So it see what Stu is doing. He's like, hey, we've been doing a lot of running, this, that, and the other. Now we're adding some additional mass, TRX transition, weight vest to implement more stress. But we're not going straight into, like, for example, if you've been off training for 6 to 8 to the last 2 months, you don't start week one hypertrophy program of mine. That's not a great place to be.
That's a good point.
So it's like you can start basically look at the hypertrophy program or whatever and do week one or two, but you pull back that volume by about 40 to 50%. You know, maybe it starts off at 40% of volume. It ramps up 5% over the first, you know, couple of days. And then, you know, you end day 14, week two, right? At still at 75% of volume, go back to week one, full throttle, maybe transition. But again, it's like the best thing you can do is be aware of like what Stu's literally living it right now. He pushed hard. What is he doing? He's not like, well, this is part of it. I'm going to keep pushing. No, you stop, you lick your wounds, you take some days off. So why? So you can get back to training sooner. Because if you don't, you're going to actually overtrain to a point where before you even get acclimated to it, you'll be 6-8 weeks in, as opposed to like 2 weeks, take it easy, take a couple of days off, train real hard for 3 or 4 days, take a day off, and then train real hard. And now you've accomplished in 4 weeks what it was going to take you 8 weeks to get back in up to speed. So that's, you know, you don't really have that too much with swimming. Certainly running can do that. Same thing, sure. Same idea.
Yeah.
Right. Weight training is the same sort of dosing. Don't take more than you can recover from.
Absolutely. There's definitely a progression with running, high rep calisthenics, and strength training. Right. You just can't jump back into what you were doing if you have neglected being able to do them for the last few months, especially. Yeah. You know, give yourself some time. I saw something the other day. I actually had a phone conversation with Pavel Zatsulin. I think I told you about that. Yeah. And it went really well. And he has a company called Strong First. And he has implemented these 5 stop signs where it really is kind of like the perceived exertion scale a little bit, but it kind of helps you when you're training to understand what failing is, right? And these 5 stop signs are really cool. I've always used to say, you know, instead of jumping into this weight room and going 100%, right, and hitting that, you know, exertion level of 10, you know, pull back a notch, you know, hit 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there. I've used to always say, instead of, you know, that using that format, I'd always just say, you know, 80% is the new 100%.
Agreed.
Just to be kind of clever, you know, just kind of pull back a notch. But some of these are really good, especially when you're dealing with endurance type stamina training, but they also apply to strength training as well. So the first one, I'm just going to go through these five real quick, Jeff.
So if you guys don't know who Pavel is, when you get done with this podcast, look him up, because he really is a pioneer in so many ways. Look him up. Digest. He's one of those guys who are like, you know who Eddie Cohen is, you should know who Pavel is, you should know who Kazmaier is. So he is one of those guys. Definitely look him up.
Yeah, he brought kettlebells to the United States from Russia. He's a Russian guy, and I always used to make fun of, you know, the commie exercises that he brings. But he's actually quite a capitalist.
Super good. He's a capitalist. Yes, he is.
So anyway, his first stop sign. And like I said, these are just little internal markers that you can notice in yourself, or if you're training with others, if they're starting to, one, their rep speed starts to slow down, right? If your first rep doesn't match your 50th rep in speed, it is very likely you're going to fail in the next few reps.
Yep.
Right. So we try to notice that, and just to avoid that muscle failure. You know, tempo slows down with pauses, you know, too many pauses. Like if you're pausing in the up position for your pushups. Now, if you're taking a PT test, different animal, you're going to want to.
We're talking training, not testing here.
Yeah, it's just training. Breathing rhythm changes. You know, if you notice your heart rate skyrockets, your breathing's, you know, not in a normal pattern. That's another stop sign. Technique changes in any way. You know, your back arches for a push-up, you start kipping for pull-ups. Those are good indicators that you're about to fail in. And then, like we just mentioned, the rate of perceived exertion, the RPE scale, you know, if that exceeds 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, you're starting to push. Now that's kind of a subjective grading criteria, I think, just kind of like my 80% is the new 100%. What exactly does that mean? But those first four are really
good. Those first four is what determines 5.
Yes.
That's exactly. Exactly. So it's like, yeah, one of those things that, like, you, if you listen to Stu, what we've always said, I'm always preaching Newton's second law. That's his first step. Or we're saying movement matters most. His first step, like, quality of movement always trumps quantity of movement. All these sort of things in fitness and training, they're super valuable because they're constantly changing too for an individual based on your state of readiness. And that's exactly what we're talking right now. It's like, don't think that the position of ability, right, your work output should be the same. And don't be so hard on yourself. It's like, oh my God, my 5RM, my 3RM, my push-up maxes have all suffered. Of course they have. But the beauty of adaptation is if you approach it with these sort of 5 stop signs, you're going to get right back up to a new high normal and yep, have the ability to regulate and go beyond. It's like a stair step. It's constantly yep, going to be getting better.
Because what you're going to avoid by following these stop signs is you're going to avoid that overtraining, that central nervous system breakdown that occurs when you fail, and, you know, which can really screw up the rest of your workout, not to mention the rest of your PT test if you're taking a PT test, and injury, you know, because once your form degrades, you're going to be more susceptible to those injuries. So, for instance, everybody knows who's done a push-up test before, especially when you first started. You've done push-ups, so you're doing push-ups so many reps for the test. It's a 2-minute test. But let's say you just haven't really quite adapted to a 2-minute stamina test as that. And you've seen this, Jeff. How many times have you seen people, or maybe even done yourself, you're trying to get that last rep, then all of a sudden your body has this uncontrollable shaking that occurs from head to toe.
Yep.
What do you think that is?
So yeah, that's the neurological limit, right?
That is a
CNS,
central nervous system breakdown, which dumps all of your energy that you had into that response, right? So you're really eating up a lot of your glycogen right there. And then by the time you get to sit-ups and pull-ups and a mile and a half run, you've got nothing left, and you just spin yep, it all on trying to get one rep of a push-up.
So that exact, and I'm being literal here, that exact thing happens when you see someone in a traumatic incident and they go into shock. That's the first step of CNS goes shutdown, loss of bowels, all those sort of things. So you're like, well, you're telling me, yes, it's your body. Here's the thing, folks. Your brain doesn't care if you're doing push-ups or you're in a car accident. It's perceived stress by the nervous system. And if you train yourself properly, you handle more stress readily with greater volume, which is why you look at guys and go, that dude handles great stress. He's able to handle, or she's able to handle extreme stress because of the way they trained, not the way they tested.
Yeah.
So it's like your brain doesn't care. Like, you get the shuddering, right? One of the first things that happens in fight or flight, yeah, is loss of finite motor skills. That's exactly what's happening through the course of fatigue, not through the threat of death or danger or harm. It's the same exact.
Same stress. Hormonally speaking, it is the same stress.
Same. Yeah. And so that's what we talk about, stress inoculation. We talk about dosing. We talk about don't train harder than you can adapt to, right? And I get it. Like, there is this, especially this population, there is such an emotional drive to succeed. And we get it. So what we're trying to tell you, because we've encountered this probably more than a human should, based off of ego and those sort of things, or younger. So as teachers now, we're trying to say, hey, you're on the path. Just learn to use your brake just as well as you're able to use your throttle.
Yeah. That's why I like those stop signs. You know, it really is beneficial to actually have some form of internal awareness of your body when you are training, because that internal awareness that you're practicing every time you train is going to really help you later on when you have to, you realize that you're up too much and you have to down-regulate, you know, because when your system's really charged and you're, you know, whether it's high stress or high, you know, from training, or it's high stress from, you know, just the situation that you're in, you're going to have to breathe, relax, and realize that you're even there. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to think through any type of tactical situation. Right. Yep. So you got to bring it down a notch. And that's where that internal awareness, practicing that internal awareness in your training, can really help you when you're in the phase three of tactical fitness, I call it, which is your active duty operator phase, and, you know, doing your job.
Yeah. So. And just notice this, folks, just so we say we're all on the same page. Those stop signs, what Stu and I talk about, at no point are we saying don't train hard.
Oh, no.
At no point are we saying don't train as hard as you can. Your ability to train with that much ferocity, intensity, and volume and precision, right? And that's the real expectation of our military, law enforcement, firefighters. We in sport too, but we're talking the tactical spaces. Precision is necessary for obvious reasons, life-saving purposes, right? Defending one's health, your brother next to you, sister next to you, whatever it may be. Identifying what Stu is saying, breathe through these things, learn to do that. And when you recognize, number set, be aware enough to recognize those. Because what you're actually trying to do is in your training session is to get to those stop signs, recognize them, address them through proper breathing, proper rest periods.
Yep.
And then how do we reinforce that fatigue and get through those, make those stop signs further away? When you're under in a state of fatigue, we want to focus on movement principles. We want to focus on breathing, and we want to focus on continuing to recognize those stop signs. Because if you do that week in, week out, those stop signs get further and further and further away. Yep. And that's what we're saying. We want you to have stop signs really far away.
Yeah. And the reason why we're even bringing this up is here's what happens to people like us. And that is people who are wanting to go do these very intense jobs. You know, when they can't do something for a while, and then the next time they can, they tend to overdo it. I mean, it's just a natural response from our personality type.
Yeah.
You know, like if I couldn't bench press for 6 months, and then all of a sudden I found a bench press, I'm like, woohoo, I'm gonna go nuts. Go do some bench press. Well, pull back a little bit and build into it, you know, progressively. Or, you know, I'm very similar to the same way of recovering from injury, you know, when you haven't been able to run for 6 months. And you know you got to build into it gently. But next thing you know, you're like, hey, it feels pretty good. I think I'll push another mile. Hey, it feels pretty good. Next day, I think I'll push another 2 miles. You know, and your progression just goes off the chart way too much versus – you know, keeping it logical and, you know, actually rebuilding that foundation, because that's really what we're doing. We're trying to rebuild the foundation that you had before all of this, and then you can stack on and grow from it exponentially, really.
That's the whole idea, right? And the first time I heard this sort of methodology was a good friend and mentor of mine, one of the first, Juan Carlos Santana. I was in Boca Raton with a group of guys from the command. We had gone down there pretty regularly to do some training. Physical training. Some America's top team, some guys were down there too that he was working with. And he put it, instead of stop signs, he put it in akin to, you got to reach out and touch that curtain. Reach out, touch that curtain. He goes, you get too close to that curtain, you get wrapped up in it though. Like, that's what we're trying to do. Is like, so he goes, sometimes you got to go for it and run through the curtain. And that's like those tests.
Right.
But every day, reach out and touch that curtain. Reach out and touch that curtain. So you're going to push. We're not saying don't push. We're just saying, you know, it's like, think about it. If you're slowly reaching towards a curtain, you're aware. You're really finite. It's like the bottom of your squat should be the point of greatest focus,
yep.
Right? The point of all these exercises. And we want you to train like that. So when it comes time to test, you just wind yourself up and you go. Your body only knows proper movement, proper breathing, proper position. And that's what we're trying to train in training.
Yeah, good point, because I like that analogy too. That makes a lot of sense. And that's, you know, it's really hard to define you know, what I have done in the past is, you know, like if I'm doing a pyramid, you know, just go up till you can't do anymore and then come back down. Well, what's that mean? Right? Does that mean I fail to a point where I'm shaking on the bar? Well, I didn't really explain that very well, you know, and after talking and learning a little bit more about these stop signs, it just made a lot more sense to me that I need to better explain what I mean by failure.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
yeah.
Fatigue is a little bit different than muscle failure. You know, yeah. Fatigue is the goal. You know, yeah. You want to fatigue it to a point before you hit that muscle failure. And if you don't believe me, here's all you got to do. Test yourself one day. And yeah. Just say, you know what, I'm going to do a few sets of just balls out 100% until I start shaking. I mean, it's not going to be pleasant, but it's certainly doable. Then try to see what happens the next 20 minutes of your workout.
Yeah.
Just see where you are. And you may be surprised at your inability to perform, you know, at 50% of what you typically do at that point.
Yep. So. Yeah, and I think that, again, maybe you're right. Like, failure is a very interesting word because I think most people attribute that as a finite absolute. And in training, it's not. It's a constant needle that's changing throughout your set and reps.
Yeah.
And so same with me. I define failure as an inability to manage a purposeful acceleration. Like, I'm choosing to move this fast when I no longer can move it that fast from that position. That's failure for that set.
Yes.
But what it's so I always do this as like the baseball analogy. If I put up 100 baseball tees with balls on it, and I said, I want you to swing as fast as you can from one tee to the next. You know, by the time you get to the sixth swing, you're pooped. But I say, take 3 seconds in between each swing. Now you're getting to swing 18 maybe. And I go, okay, take 3 or 4 hard swings, 3 or 4 hard breaths. 3 or 4 hard swings, 4 or 5 hard breaths. And all of a sudden you're at 45 swings before your movement pattern breaks down, the bat speed breaks down, right? Because if you watch, like, go to high school baseball practice, you see a bucket of balls and they're swinging fatigue. Go to major league batting practice, they're taking 3 to 5 swings before they rotate out. Why? Because in a game setting, their average swing is 2.1 to 2.3 swings per at bat. So why are we swinging 14 times? You're propagating fatigue.
Yeah.
So that's why training to true failure, what we're talking about, is a terrible idea. But training to this point of failure using these stop signs is going to get you more swings, higher velocity, you know, you bench press, pull up, push up, use whatever you want. But it's finite. It's a movement pattern that's maintained with the maximum amount of effort, and you're aware of it.
Yeah. One thing I have learned too is that, you know, some things that I've written in the past, you know, I'm embarrassed about reading today, right? Just because
that means you've done it right then.
I have grown, right? And I remember writing this article once, you succeed by failing, right? You know, and it's a clever title. That's all it really is. It doesn't fully explain the, you know, what I mean by failing. And I probably didn't really explain what I mean by failing in the article either. I was just like, go until you can't do anymore, take a break, try it again, take a break. Yep. Right. But, you know, I like these little objective grading criteria for what failing is, or should I say, we don't want to get to failure. We want to get to fatigue.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And that's probably a better way to explain it versus saying go to muscle failure.
Yeah.
You want to go to muscle fatigue.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to that central nervous system breakdown of muscle failure.
Yeah.
At all.
Because then everything shuts down. Like, yeah. Your ability to contract, your ability to move something, the ability to stop something yourself. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, oh, wait a minute. I can get better quality reps with greater time, because we're talking mechanical advantage now, and time under tension does better at hypertrophy development, strength development, and motor function enhancement. So you get all of it, right? When you're really aware, that's what I say, your best friend is your rest period and what you do during that rest period.
Yeah.
Right? Are you breathing through it? Are you focused on it? Are you moving? Are you drinking water? How is it that you can best enhance your rest period?
Yeah. And, you know, and depending on what you're doing, whether it's a strength exercise where you truly need rest, or it's a muscle stamina exercise when you're you can rest with an active rest, maybe doing something, you know, a little less, maybe a different muscle group, maybe a, you know, a different system altogether, just kind of running, you know, jogging, biking, you know, whatever that is in between your pull-up sets, you know, just to rest your muscles that are being worked that hard, but you're never really resting the body. So it really kind of depends on, you know, what your goals are at the end of that, that workout cycle. But
now's the perfect time to do this, right? Now's the perfect time to, again, we talked about before, it's like one of the best things you can do to get back into training is like work on your sleep habits now, work on your dietetic habits now, work on these recovery habits, these resting habits, these being aware of how you feel, not based on the number in the program, not based on the, like, cause again, like whether it's my program or Stu's, the numbers we're putting in there, those are just starting points. Those are like, hey, here's a good starting point for you. Either bring your percentage down if you need to, bring it up, right? Increase your rest period or shorten it. That's what we're talking about. You know, really probably the reps and sets are the ones that are probably really truly prescribed, but our rest periods, right? Like I said, manipulate them.
Sure. Okay? Absolutely.
Manipulate them.
Yeah, especially as we're transitioning back into a modality of training that you have not been able to do in significant amount of time. So whether that, you know, if this was, you know, we may see this again in the fall when we are transitioning out of our running and we're getting back into the weight room, you know, then what do we do?
Yep.
That's going to be a new question for me. Up with something creative on that one. But, you know, hopefully, you know, with some, you know, weighted calisthenics, you know, bands, TRX, you know, dumbbells outside, you know, whatever that is that we have to do, backpacks, sandbags, sleds, you know, we can make it happen. I mean, we can still work on strength and power without having a, you know, squat rack available to us.
Good programming can accommodate pretty much, you know, about the only thing that body weight training bands and certain other things can't accommodate is skill acquisition for certain things in the sport. But as far as like physical development in this time period, making good use of it and creating that real purposeful fatigue, man, like for those of you that have been, you may not even know you've done it, applied this timeline really well. Some of you are going to be like, man, I got right back into the weight room and right back in the pool, you know, in about 7 to 10 days. Why? Well, because you were practicing awareness and mindfulness in your training. And that's kind of a lot of people were forced to do here. It's like, well, I can't just do a multitude of machines that do all the support structure for me. It's like, I really have to focus on these things that I've been putting off. Right. And that's, I think a lot of you are going to be really, which is probably so many of you are really itching to get back in because you probably already noticed your improvements in this time of focusing on things that you otherwise may not have.
You know what? I think a lot of people will be pleasantly surprised, especially if they weren't used to doing a calisthenic cycle and they did a calisthenic cycle for the last 10 or 12 weeks, that they really didn't lose that much when they got back into the weight room. You know, it has a way of maintaining a certain level of strength, but you know, if you're looking for your 1 RM max, you'll probably need a good 4 to 6 week cycle to get back up to those one rep maxes. But
for those people that were overtrained when this thing happened, and then went into a forceful calisthenic band TRX type thing, I bet you some people have gotten even stronger.
You go into give yourself a few days. Give yourself a few days to kind of.
That's not a challenge.
Don't start on day one with a 1 RM.
That's not a challenge.
You know, but yeah, I always found that I was always stronger after a week off of lifting, compared to if I took a week off of running. It's like I never ran before in my life. You know, it's like starting all over again. It was awful.
So I think, you know, like I'm certain we've got our point across, but
yes,
and as folks, as things change again and things are a little bit more concrete nationally, whatever that means, as far as openings of things. And because, you know, like if you see videos from gyms in Hong Kong, they have plexiglass in between every piece of equipment and you're like,
all that,
you know, like Gold's Gym declared bankruptcy. 24 Hour Fitness is, we're going to be right there. Lifetime, One Life. I don't, to be honest with you, not to be a naysayer, I don't see gyms, big gyms being around in 6 months. I just don't see it.
You know, I think that the new normal is, the new normal is invest in companies that make home gyms.
Yep. Like that's where we're going to end up being. Not because people don't want to go to gyms. I think that the people that want to go is a very, very, very small percentage in most states' revenue.
It's already a small percentage.
Right? And so now you have you guys, the men and women, they're just, that's what they do. That's their thing. That's their social. There's not enough of those people to keep gyms open. There's plenty of those people to get supplement companies going. There's not enough of those people to keep gyms going, right? Because a lot of them, like, the revenue that's generated by most big gyms, and I didn't understand this because Catherine is a manager for Lifetime, a big global business. Majority of their revenue comes from personal training.
Yeah.
That's a very small percentage of that small percentage. So the vast majority of people are going just on their own. Well, now you're going to find a lot of gyms are only doing one-on-one training with personal trainers. Gyms will not be able to stay open.
Yeah, maybe more of, yeah, that's a good point. It may be more of a
one-on-one, like
boutique style. Training.
So CrossFit gyms should do, I would imagine, do very, very well. I would imagine they should do fine.
Take their stuff outside a little bit. That's always nice. An outdoor gym.
Yep. Yeah, that's what's happening in a lot of places too. Is like outdoor spaces or you know, for gym spaces, but you know, we don't really know.
Yeah.
What we know is there's a lot of people that want to go back. But whether or not there's a place to go back to is the real question.
Yeah. There's a lot of overhead in having those type of facilities.
Yes,
too.
There is.
You know,
there is. And I, you know, fortunately for me, my flooring will be in a couple of weeks and so will the equipment. But my model won't change. You know, I'm only training, you know, teaching one or two people at a time.
Yeah. That's smart.
That's where I sit. And fortunately I've got that business model to do that. I'm super blessed. So, and we'll grow it as best we can to facilitate better teaching to the multitude.
You know what?
I
think for you, absolutely. You got to have a video component that, you know, things that you are doing, you know, and you can add a lot of revenue to that type of business if you're going to stay open. But we're going to see some different business models with fitness for sure.
Yep. It's a little bit scary for everyone. You know, it's like one of those things that there's no sure thing right now. But what we do know is that the service that, like, you know, I speak for us, the service that we provide is something that we find real value in. So do other people. So we're going to be creative. We're going to keep doing what is best truly for those that want to serve this country.
Yeah.
And we'll adapt.
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you want to find out what Jeff is up to, check him out at performancefirstus.com, mine, stewsmithfitness.com. And if you got any questions, post them in the video comment section below. We'll get to them. Got ideas for future topics to discuss?
Yep.
We'll happily entertain those as well. So thanks for listening, and good luck with this next phase of whatever
mystery phase,
whatever you're in, whatever state you're in, it's probably going to be a little different. So
yep.
Hang in there, America. We'll get on it. Well, thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate it, Sue.